Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn, and you are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Wednesday, the 3rd of August. We are delighted to have Frank Rich with us the first part of this hour. His new piece in New York Magazine is Murdoch Hacked Us Too, in which he says the Murdoch Empire are not the real transgressions are not its outright partisanship, its tabloid sleaze, its Washington lobbying, or even what liberals must love to hate, the bogus fair and balanced propaganda masquerading as journalism at Fox News. In fact, these misdemeanors are red herrings, distractions from the real News Corp corruption that now threatens to bring down its management and radically reconfigures and reduce its international corporate footprint. We'll talk about those real threats as we carry on with our interview with Frank. Frank is now with New York Magazine as writer-in-large. Each month his work features politics and culture, and there will be a monthly section anchored by his essay. He's a commentator as well at nymag.com. He, of course, was with the New York Times. My Sunday mornings are forever changed. He knows that, but it's great to have him still with us. Op-ed columnist since 1994. Before that, the paper's chief drama critic from 1980 to 1993. He was also a senior writer for the New York Times Magazine for a number of years. He's the author of Ghost Light, a memoir, and the greatest story ever sold, The Decline and Fall of the Truth from 9/11 to Katrina, and he is a creative consultant to HBO. Frank Rich, hello.
Hi, how are you?
Well, I'm great. How are you?
I'm great, actually. I'm in spite of what's going on in the world, but and in Wisconsin, I might add. But I'm terrific.
I'm glad things are working well. But
yeah, yes, I I'd done the Times column for 17 years, and about a year and a half ago, before I made the switch, I started looking for something different. Just as a writer, I wanted to write longer and somewhat less frequently, and so this is really exciting for me. I mean, I just started. It's just my second piece. The editor of New York Magazine was my editor at the Times and sort of created my column to begin with. So it's sort of a perfect situation for me.
Yeah. Well, I miss you on Sundays.
Well,
but
thank you. It's nice
I'm delighted
to miss
to have you
and, here. And to walk away when people still miss you rather than saying, when is that guy going to get off the stage?
No, Frank, they'll never say that about you because you're the best. You are.
Well, thank you.
You're the
thank
best. You. So you have this amazing story about Murdoch. In 1976, you're working at the New York Post. Carry on from there.
Well, when I was a kid, in one of my first jobs in New York, I was 25. I was working as a film critic at the New York Post when it was owned by the legendary and stingy Dolly Schiff. And it was sort of a liberal tabloid, and Murdoch bought it. No one had really heard of Murdoch in America. Certainly, almost no one at the New York Post had. And we thought he was going to be a savior because the paper was sort of badly run. And early on, we discovered that was not the case. And indeed, the number of people who fled, myself among them, in that first year or so that he took over included tons of people later ended up at the New York Times, like Anna Quinlan and Clyde Haberman and Joyce Pernick and Joyce Wadler, Jane Perlez, who's the Times' great Pakistan correspondent right now. What drove us away? It was not, as Murdoch's apologists want everyone to believe, that it was turned into this right-wing paper and that it was such sensational tabloid journalism. In fact, at the beginning, Murdoch endorsed liberal candidates in New York and used the paper to thump for them. What bothered people was this corruption, the corruption we see to this day, that then on behalf of liberal candidates, he ran editorials as news stories.
Mm-hmm.
He shut out people he perceived as enemies and opponents. And in my case, as movie critic at a much lower, less cosmic level, I was told to keep advertisers in mind when I reviewed movies, which was code for, you know, pull your punches. The DNA of Murdoch 35 years later is the same. We're seeing it come out in England in terms of wholesale corruption, stepping on people's privacy, buying and selling police and politicians. And the point of my piece in New York Magazine is that Americans are deluded if they think that it's a completely different company here. I mean, some of the same people involved in the scandal there have been executives here. The head of News of the World and of Murdoch's newspaper operations in London when the hacking was going on, who told Parliament that only one person was responsible, which we now know was absurd. He was running Wall Street Journal and Dow Jones in America until a few weeks ago.
Right.
The last editor of the News of the World spent 5 years at the New York Post, including the immediate aftermath of 9/11, where now people are looking to see if 9/11 victims were hacked by someone in the Murdoch organization. So it's all of a pattern, and the fact that America has sort of become inured to it is unfortunate, but I think it's a scandal that's going to keep going for a couple of years, and people are going to wake up to what's been going on.
You say early in the piece and later on you talk about how it's time to look on this side of the pond. Are there really top-notch investigative journalists? Are you the guy, actually, who's going to be looking at what's happening on this side of the pond?
I feel the real investigative journalism that's going on has to be done by a major news organization. And the only one that has taken it on, and it's way to their credit, is indeed the New York Times. They now have multiple reporters working both in London and in New York tracking this thing. They're following the lead of The Guardian, the paper in London that broke open the scandal over the past few years. Last fall, when I was still at the paper, the Times ran a cover story in the Sunday magazine about the News of the World hacking. And basically its point was, contrary to what Murdoch people were saying, it wasn't just one rogue reporter, that there was a web of this and other people were involved. At the time, News Corporation, which is Murdoch's company, attacked the Times, said the Times was motivated by jealousy and competitive pressures with the Wall Street Journal, said the story was completely false, and they even complained to the Times public editor. Well, that story has been completely vindicated, the story the Times ran. People can find it online. I referred to it and linked to it in my piece in New York. And those same reporters are now on the case. And politicians aren't going to pursue Murdoch because half of them are bought by him.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to be a mixture of that kind of journalism civil lawsuits and possibly regulators getting into the act.
Yeah. Well, as you point out, at Fox, we had four active presidential candidates on the payroll.
Yeah, this is unprecedented. But, we get inured to it over time. And you think, CNN, they have Bill Bennett and Donna Brazile, and David Gergen is on a lot of networks, and George Stephanopoulos, he worked for Clinton, so he's, an anchor at ABC News. That's not the same thing as having former political operatives or even partially active political operatives bloviate on news shows, as having actually potential presidents of the United States on the payroll for chits that will be called in should any of them get elected, starting, of course, with Sarah Palin. But there are three others. And along the way, we have a list in New York Magazine of them. So many politicians have been on the payroll, including some Democrats, that it's just it's shocking to see the full list. We don't even have a full list.
Well, tell me about David Cameron. Do you think that he's in huge trouble because of all of this?
I think he's in big trouble. And of course, the key is Andy Coulson, the editor of the News of the World, who has now been arrested, who Cameron really stupidly or with bad information or cynically hired for his, his government. Now, of course, it's gone. I think Cameron could be in trouble, and it seems, I say this as an American observer, not an expert of British politics, that Labor now has a wind at its back because of this. It's such a big deal in England it's a daily story there now.
Well, plus you've got those you get thousands and thousands of notes about these hacking episodes, and those are going to take some time to go through, aren't they? That's massive.
Yes. I mean, as again, the New York Times reported, there's something like, several thousand handwritten notes that were sitting essentially in big black plastic garbage bags at Scotland Yard. that were left unexamined because essentially the Scotland Yard investigation was shut down, and we're learning why, because various people were paid off or got favors from the Murdoch organization. All of that has yet to be gone through. When you think so when the Murdoch flacks in this country say, oh, there's no way that anyone was hacked at 9/11 in America, that's a completely meaningless statement because no one's gone through the evidence yet.
Right.
And since all their other attempts to contain this have Watergate-style proven inoperative and fallen apart, I'd say, you know, everyone should fasten their seatbelts. It's going to be quite a ride on this.
Mm-hmm. And what should happen to the Republicans, to Fox News particularly, if it is discovered, and this is not, you know, a big if, it's a possible if,
right.
We find out that the 9/11 family members' phones were hacked?
I think that's going to be devastating for Murdoch's connection with the Republican Party. It's worth noting that very few politicians have dared question Murdoch, even since the scandal broke. And those that have tended to be, unsurprisingly, liberal Democrats. The one exception is a Republican congressman from New York, Peter King, who is conservative and has been running those, in my view, ridiculous McCarthy-like hearings about investigating, you know, Islam in America in the House. But Peter King, of all people, is the person who told the FBI he wanted an investigation of whether there was hacking after 9/11. That's a real indicator, to my mind, that if they find just one example of this, it's going to bring the Republican Party down on Murdoch the way the Tories have now come down on him and distanced themselves from him in England.
And are those investigations underway, Frank?
Yes,
they are.
The FBI investigation's underway, and I read somewhere last week, someone reported, I can't remember who, but that it might have been Bloomberg, that Eric Holder, the Attorney General, has now met with some 9/11 families to give them a progress of what's still, I gather, in its very, very early stages.
I found it interesting. You have been personally touched by the Murdoch empire when you talked about the two times in 17 years as a Times columnist that you had to seek security advice.
Yes, one of them did not involve Murdoch. It involved, in my view, an even more equally insidious web, the religion of Scientology. This is some years ago. But what happened to – that was in the 1990s. So what happened to me in the middle of the past decade, around 2004 or 5, I wrote some pieces about my judgment, hardly a radical judgment that Mel Gibson and his movie The Passion of the Christ were anti-Semitic. Bill O'Reilly decided to anoint himself as Gibson's great defender. It also turned out that O'Reilly had written a novel that Gibson had optioned for the movies. But whatever the motive, he started attacking me, which is fine up to a point, but he did it 6 times on a prime time, the highest rated prime time show in cable news. He showed my picture, and I started getting real threats, violent threats, anti-Semitic threats, and had to talk to people about it to make sure that I wasn't, you know, asking for trouble. And this is, you know, I'm a minor figure. I can take it. I had a big organization like the New York Times behind me. But they go after, you know, and particularly O'Reilly and Glenn Beck when he was there, they go after people who really are defenseless, academics that they disagree with. Glenn Beck, when he was still on Fox, did so many shows about actually rather distinguished and nearly 80-year-old sociologist, a woman named Frances Fox Piven, at City University of New York, for an essay she wrote about poverty in the 1960s, that she got death threats. And that someone like that is not defensible. There's all the stalking by O'Reilly producers of people he disagrees with. And, of course, while he'll say he had nothing to do with it in creating this climate, the abortion doctor in Wichita, Tiller, was attacked 29 times on 29 different O'Reilly shows, called a baby killer by him repeatedly, and was assassinated in his church.
Yes.
And so this is, you know, this is par for the course. And, of course, they claim to have no direct contact with anus, or there's no direct cause and effect, and sometimes I'm sure there's not, but there's just too much of a lighting fire, lighting matches in crowded rooms from this gang.
What's the difference, Frank? You talk about the tabloidization of America, which is and no doubt always will be unstoppable, and the Murdochization of America. What's the difference between the two?
It's very important that they not be conflated. The tabloidization of America is, you know, as we all know, a salacious gossip industry. Trashy tabloid journalism, trashy tabloid entertainment on television particularly, but not exclusively on cable. The vulgarity of a lot of American culture. Well, that's always been part of our culture. It's never going to change. Murdoch is a big purveyor of it. He's hardly the only purveyor of it now or in the past. What's different from what he's up to, what his defense is, oh, people don't like me because I dare to run, you know, a lot of, you know, Paris Hilton stories, or people don't like me because I'm too far to the right. None of those are red herrings, as in the passage you read before. What's the Murdochization is something else. It is using various forms of intimidation and sometimes spreading money around to seize more power and money, regardless of the political complexion of it, to target enemies, sometimes personal enemies, sometimes political enemies. I guess I was perceived as a minor one of those. And that's different from just running trashy tabloids and having right-wing politics. I'll give you a classic example I did not mention in my piece. Michael Milken, you know, the junk bond guy from the other Wall Street horrible era in the 80s, was at Drexel Burnham, was sentenced to jail by a very distinguished judge in New York, Kimba Wood, after a trial. There was no ambiguity that this guy was guilty or that he deserved the punishment. He was a friend of Murdoch. So what did Murdoch do? He used the New York Post back then to run gossip about Kimba Wood, this judge's marriage and remarriage. She did nothing wrong, but the idea was to punish her and humiliate her and intimidate her and to wreak vengeance for his friend Michael Milken, who was a felon. Mm-hmm. So this stuff goes on all the time with him. That's not the same thing as just running tough, you know, trashy papers.
Right. We're welcoming phone calls for Frank. Frank Rich is our guest. I hope you've had a chance to read his piece. You can find it online in New York Magazine. And he is with us for more of this hour. Murdoch Hacked Us Too is the name of the piece. The number for you to join us is 800-486-8655. If you want to speak with Frank, I would recommend you call now while he's still with us. That makes sense. The email address is talk@wpr.org. talk@wpr.org. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Frank Rich is our guest. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. Starting our calls with Rick in Milwaukee. Hello, Rick.
Oh, good morning, Kathleen, and to your guest. I'd just like to mention just a short thing before I say what I want to say, and that is I had followed the Milken affair, too, and he was sentenced to 12 years in prison, and he got out after less than 12 months. Mm. One of those California country club prisons, you know, where they play badminton in the morning and drink lemonade, you know. Mm. But actually what kind of disturbs me about this, the whole tenor of this discussion, is it has this kind of left-wing ideological glee about it, you know, gotcha, you know, we got the conservatives this time. Personally, from my experience, I think that liberal so-called media types engage in activities that are, if not identical to this phone hacking, similarly along those lines and very close. And
who does that, Rick?
Well, actually, I think that public radio is involved in this kind of thing.
That we're hacking people's phones?
That you're not really a fair arbiter of a question like this.
We really do not engage in anything like what Rupert Murdoch does. We just don't hack people's phones.
I mean, you'd have to give a specific example.
Yeah.
Who was hacked, who did it, and when, if this is public knowledge. You can't just throw accusations like this out and not back them up. So who were they? Who were these hackers? What station did it? What part of NPR? Who were the victims?
Radio.
What, Rick?
So what I'm going to do is I'm going to go to a professional who has more knowledge about this kind of thing. And see what he advises.
Okay, because rumors don't cut it.
Yeah, rumors really don't cut it. And it certainly is a conservative operation, Fox is, but as you mentioned earlier, he doesn't really care. Does he have a political ideology, or is he just...
He has a moderately conservative ideology, but the fact is that he raised money for Hillary Clinton in 2008. His paper is supported... Cuomo this year in New York. He's had a history in England of supporting Tony Blair, a Labour prime minister, not just a conservative. So he's not monochromatic. It's whoever do his business interests and personal interests the most good.
And what is his motivation? Is it to make a whole lot of money, Frank?
Money and power, and I think a feeling of influence. You know, people who want this kind of power are not really like you and me, and I would include in this way people who are not corrupt who want power, including many presidents of the United States. I've always felt someone has to be somewhat crazy and power mad to want that job. Rupert Murdoch wants this, and he does like making money. He loves big deals. He loves big profits, and he loves having influence and making people cringe and kiss his ring and kowtow to him.
Yeah. Was the tipping point for all of this the scandal involving the young girl who was murdered on her way home?
Yes, the tipping point was this 13-year-old girl, Millie Fowler, when they discovered that her phone was hacked. And what was devastating about that was because her phone, when they were hacking the phone, I guess just to get, melodramatic material of people trying to reach her and searching for her because she was missing and not yet known to be dead, they actually deleted messages on her phone so that they could collect new messages when her voicemail got full. This, therefore, gave the police investigating that case and her family false hope that she was alive, and so actually interfered with and slowed down the investigation of her murder.
Mm-hmm. And I would imagine that hacking of the phones, et cetera, of the royal family members also didn't help Murdoch's organization.
Right. That preceded this. I think that it was, though, when people saw it, that just happened to an ordinary person that it enraged them. People may not have so much sympathy for celebrities, even royal celebrities, dealing with tabloid press. But once it got to this level, people went nuts. There was a similar incident not involving hacking, but involving the Murdoch empire a few years ago in the United States. It was when a publishing division of his, as I'm sure many listeners recall, signed up a book by O.J. Simpson called If I Did It. That was like he was going to sort of do a non-confession, so that Murdoch can make money off of it. Murdoch completely endorsed and was enthusiastic about that project until the moment that the families of Nicole Brown Simpson and Ron Goldman protested, much like the Millie Fowler parents in family in England. Once it became clear that he was violating murder victims' families, he dropped that book like a hot potato, as if he had never solicited in the first place. The Millie Fowler case in England has sort of hit him in the same way, except it involves hacking instead of a book contract.
Mm-hmm. And plus you have thousands of people, as you say, who are still not identified, who are hacking victims. What about Gordon Brown's 4-month-old son with cystic fibrosis?
Yes, they're claiming that didn't happen through hacking, but however they got the information, why would you run a news story about 4-month-old child's illness? I just don't understand it, no matter who the parents are. I mean, but this is this is their level of humanity.
Yeah. And this business, is there any precedent in history at all for paying off people at Scotland Yard or other police departments?
In all of history or in England or in my...
Well, in recent history. Is there something comparable?
Well, I feel that one thing we've never gotten to the bottom of is specifically involving Murdoch. I mean, first of all, there have been, you know, in the history of gangster America and everything, you know, we all know the stories of corrupt journalists and police. But I would particularly hope that someone is going to look into much more the relationship between Bernie Kerik as New York City Police Commissioner and Murdoch. He was sort of a creation of the Murdoch empire with Giuliani's help. We now know he was corrupt. He's in jail right now as New York Police Commissioner. Then it was the Murdoch empire more than anyone else that boosted him for the role of being in charge of American security, being in the Bush administration cabinet as cabinet secretary for the then newish Department of Homeland Security. What was that about? Kerik was given a huge book advance by HarperCollins, a division of Murdoch's empire. He was so chummy with all those people. What were they getting something else in exchange? I just raised the question because we really don't know. The person who most knew what was going on was Judith Regan, an editor at HarperCollins, who was very close to Murdoch, sort of in the way Rebecca Brooks was over there. She ultimately was fired by Murdoch. She filed a wrongful termination suit. In that suit, in papers that showed up, she accused Roger Ailes, the head of Fox News, of asking her to lie to federal investigators sent to vet Kerik for his appointment to the Bush cabinet. Before we learned anything more about this case, what went on, including what Ailes told her and how that played out, Murdoch settled that suit for almost $11 million.
Whoa, so she's not...
Judith Regan
again. Yeah, she's not talking. She'll never be talking.
Exactly.
What do you make of Murdoch's appearance here? You talk about it, likening it to Godfather 2.
Well, I felt that that scene of them on television, him and his son appearing before Parliament, had a Godfather 2 sort of thing. And a number of people, not me, pointed out that Murdoch's sort of somewhat doddering appearance reminded them of Junior Soprano and The Sopranos, but sort of that it was phony, or there was a famous mafia don in New York City for years who, I think his name was Gigante, who would wander around Greenwich Village in pajamas and a bathrobe and slippers and act like he was crazy, and he was crazy like a fox. It was all a ruse to hide what was his involvement with the operation. There was something about the way that they answered questions, the way they just didn't he and his son didn't remember anything, or in the case of the son, filibustered or said things were beside the point and recited talking points that reminded a lot of people, I think, of slick families of other ill repute appearing before Congress in decades past, including as in The Godfather too.
And finally, Frank, how hard a job will it be, and what do you think needs to be investigated on this side of the pond?
I think what needs to be investigated is any sign of corruption, whether the alleged hacking of 9/11 victims, we don't know if it's true yet, to the relationships with politicians who could grant the Murdoch Empire favors, and with their relationship with people like Bernie Kerik, who actually were involved in law enforcement. Bernie Kerik is in jail. What else did he do? We knew he did all sorts of corrupt things. It's a legitimate question to ask if he supplied information to Murdoch outlets like news outlets like Fox and the Post, in the same way that corrupt police clearly did to Murdoch news operations in England. We've got to get to the bottom of it. It's going to be hard, but I think the investigation won't be that hard in the end. I think it's going to take time, partially because as more and more people are canned or leave, and possibly find themselves in some kind of legal jeopardy, they're going to sing. That's what always happens in conspiracies like this.
Mm-hmm.
And so if this were Watergate, we've witnessed the Saturday Night Massacre with the closing of the News of the World and the resignation of Rebecca Brooks and Leslie Hinton. But I think there are many more chapters to come.
And do you think the American public is vitally interested in this?
No. I think that people in the media are interested. People in New York and Washington are interested. I think as it comes to America, there's a slow fuse here. I think more and more people are going to get interested.
Should they be?
Absolutely, because it's a corruption in the heart of our political and media systems. Look, a lot of, you know, go back to your previous, the caller, a lot of liberal or so-called liberal news organizations or mainstream organizations have made mistakes of various kinds. Most do from time to time. The Times did during the run-up to Iraq War and Jason Blair.
Yes.
That said, this is of a scale that's completely different. It's in very much in the corridors of power for much of the past decade. And we need to know what went down.
Yeah, Frank, thank you ever so much.
We're wonderful to talk to you again.
And you as well. Any old time, sir.
Okay, I look forward to it.
Thanks, Frank.
Thank you.
Frank Rich, he's now writing for New York Magazine. And his piece, which you can find online, is Murdoch Hacked Us Too. The News Corp scandal already exposed just how thoroughly the company had corrupted Britain. Now it's time to look on this side of the pond. Delighted to have a chance to speak with Frank, who is one heck of a writer. Nobody quite like Frank. He has inimitable style and hard work. He's also, he does a lot of other things. He's the author of books. He's a creative consultant to HBO, and his pieces will be longer, as he said. He wanted something new to do, something different, so he went to New York where he could write longer pieces, and there's going to be a monthly section anchored by his always provocative and darn well-written essays. We're going to continue our conversation about what may be happening on this side of the pond and the Murdoch Empire here in America. Paul Levinson will be joining us momentarily, professor of communication and media studies at Fordham University in New York City. Our phone number remaining the same, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. The email address is talk@wpr.org. I'm Kathleen Dunn. You are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Professor Paul Levinson joining us now, professor of communication and media studies at Fordham University in New York City. He has said that the grimmest possibility is if Murdoch and all his influence is excised from News Corp and somehow a majority of stockholders take root who are not conservatively interested, then you might see a very different Fox News and Wall Street Journal and New York Post in the 2012 election. We're continuing our conversation, and we'll be welcoming phone calls. 800-486-8655 is our number. Professor Levinson, thank you very much for being with us.
Well, my pleasure. And by the way, by grimmest possibility, I meant grimmest possibility for the conservatives,
right?
Not for what's good in the world.
Yeah. Tell me about what investigation you think needs to take place, and if you are convinced that it will take place, looking at possible illegalities in the Murdoch Empire in America?
Well, I think we need the widest possible investigation here in the United States, because if that kind of hacking, criminal activity, invasion of people's privacy, all the things that we've heard about went on in England, there's no reason that it wouldn't have gone on here in the United States. That said, however, I'm a great stickler for innocent until proven guilty, and so far News Corp hasn't been found guilty of anything, even in England. People have been arrested. Obviously, it's under investigation. So I draw a sharp dichotomy between insisting that there should be an investigation here, a very widespread, in-depth investigation. I'm convinced that there will be an investigation. In fact, the FBI is investigating now, from what I've heard. But that doesn't mean that Murdoch and News Corp will be found guilty of anything here in the United States, although I would be surprised if nothing like that was going on here at all.
And are you deeply offended? Is it a new low for the history of journalism for these kinds of practices to be taking place, or are they somewhat common in tabloid journalism?
Well, one of the things that I'm well known for regarding the media in the United States is I'm an absolutist when it comes to the First Amendment, meaning I think that the government should not make any law whatsoever abridging or regulating the press. And that's a very basic bulwark of our democracy. But there's a price that I think the media have to pay, that the press has to pay, in order to receive that kind of favored treatment. And the price is they have to be honest and honorable. And they certainly cannot use the First Amendment as a shield to in any way commit criminal activity, which certainly unauthorized hacking is. And so, yes, to the extent that this happened in England, I'm certainly offended as someone who's such a staunch advocate of the First Amendment. And I'd like to see it extirpated both in England and if it's been going on here as well. Mm-hmm. But, you know, that said, I also want to say that I don't think that this really has anything to do with the conservative philosophy of News Corp and the Fox News Channel in particular. I'm a progressive. I dislike what I see and hear on Fox, but that doesn't mean that they committed any criminal activities whatsoever. And I know Frank Rich was on earlier, and I've been on the O'Reilly Factor myself, and there's no doubt that it's not a very ennobling experience. And I read his article in the Times. I received anti-Semitic email after I'd been on. But that's the way, to some extent, the world is. And as long as no one at News Corp was committing a criminal activity, I think that we should criticize them and condemn them for their political points of view, but not call for anybody's arrest or imprisonment or anything like that.
Mm-hmm. I still remember the days, though, Paul, when I look at those stations and some of the radio stations that you hear now, and there's absolutely no thought about presenting a lot of different points of view. And I'm thinking, how did we reach this state? You know, here's who you should vote for. Here's somebody who's running to be governor of the state of Ohio. Let's have them on the air a lot of times. It's just a whole different media landscape than when I started in this business.
Well, absolutely. In fact, John Kasich was at one point subbing for O'Reilly when I was on. So I was sitting right across the table from him. But at the same time, although Fox is extremely one-sided, MSNBC is equally one-sided in the opposite direction. So if you look at the overall picture and you throw in Al Gore's current TV station, where Keith Olbermann now has a show, if you think about NPR, if you think about the right-wing talk show people, overall, I think that we do have a lot of diversity in terms of our media and opinions that are expressed. And so if a given person chooses to watch Fox because it makes them feel ratified in their conservative points of view, well, I think that that's what democracy is all about.
So you wouldn't be a proponent of bringing back the Fairness Doctrine?
No, I wouldn't. And that gets back again to my feeling about the First Amendment. I don't think the government should have anything to say or do with what the press, what the media do. There has to be a complete separation, because today's fairness doctrine could be tomorrow's, well, a Republican-controlled Senate and House of Representatives and a Republican president pass a law that says there has to be a Republican point of view at least three out of four times, because 75% of the population voted Republican in the last election. Once you go down that road of the government saying what the media should do, we get into very dangerous territory.
We go to phone calls for you. Paul Levinson, our guest this part of the show, professor of communication and media studies at Fordham University in New York City. Are things rotten in the Murdoch empire in the United States? Does it need to be investigated? Do you even care about this? Is what we're talking about with him, and going a little beyond that. Pat in Columbus, our first caller. Hi, Pat.
Hi. I just wanted to make a comment about the first caller who actually made a decent point, in that oftentimes the liberal media dance around and go gotcha when anything incriminates conservative media. And I think we need to be very careful in not doing that, because it doesn't reflect well on us, nor will it ever actually help get to the bottom of this particular scandal.
Well, I'm not sure what Frank Rich meant by gotcha. I think that it's completely appropriate for all media to vigorously report on issues like this, because the public, if ever there was a situation in which the public has a need to know, it would be one in which the media are engaging in criminal activity, invading people's privacy, hacking their phones. But if you're just talking about a frivolous gotcha, well, yeah, that doesn't do any good at all. But I think that the liberal media and the conservative media should all be on top of this story and see how it plays out.
Well, and there's a big element of this story that is sort of beyond political conversation, isn't it? We're talking about people's privacy, about the family of a murder victim who were given hope that she might be alive because the phones were hacked into, the potential of 9/11 families having their phones hacked. Doesn't this go beyond politics to matters of human decency?
Absolutely. It's about as low as it goes. And one of the things that I teach my students in the very first journalism class that they take is that they should never let their pursuit of a story violate their human ethics. When you become a journalist, you don't give up your humanity and suddenly go out and do things that no normal, decent person would think is appropriate, not to mention that those things are against the law. But again, this is not something that we know that Fox has been doing here in the United States, and they have yet to be found guilty in a court of law in England. So I think that we have to, you know, bear these things in mind. An accusation of guilt is not the same as proof of guilt.
Well, let's talk about ethics. I wonder how many people in much of media today even think about what the ethical thing is to do.
Well, this is one of the problems. I think that in the frenzy to get the scoop, and this is no doubt what was behind what happened in England, if the charges are true, people do leave their ethics at the door when they go out in the sprint, in this fevered race to get the news first and get original information that no one else has. And it's understandable that reporters and the press would be tempted to do this. But the whole point of having some kind of ethical code is we should always allow that ethical code to bump against our temptations and restrain our temptations when they're doing things that are wrong.
Mm-hmm. I would think that there are a number of people who are on the air these days who really are motivated by an attempt to get higher ratings, to be better known. A lot of these people seem to have huge egos, and bring in some money for the place they work for and bring in a lot of money for themselves. I see a lot more of that operating. I've been in this business for years and years and years, and it just seems to be so much more prevalent now.
Yes, and one of the factors that's not a coincidence is these events are alleged to have happened in the old-fashioned newspaper press.
Yes, yeah.
And that's not a coincidence because the circulation of newspapers has been declining. Advertising is leaving newspapers. And so newspapers now more than ever in the last decade are feeling the desperation of they have to do something that makes them more original, unique if possible, different from everything else that you can so easily get on the web. And that certainly has increased the pressure.
Yeah. What are your thoughts about the testimony that Rupert Murdoch gave in England, how you think he is presenting himself, the scope of this so far, the number of people who have resigned?
I didn't think he came across very effectively in that testimony that we saw from England. And unless he's doing a Father Gigante routine, he was the mafioso who used to walk the streets of New York in a bathrobe and pretended that he was senile and hoped to avoid FBI investigation by doing that, but it didn't help him in the long run. Unless that was a deliberate act on Rupert Murdoch's part, if I were a stockholder in News Corp, I would think that we need someone else at the helm.
And would you agree with Frank Rich's statement that somebody who needs to be looked at much more thoroughly in this country is Bernie Kerik?
Well, Bernie Kerik obviously is a horrendous example of what can go wrong. The fact that he was police commissioner of New York, Rudy Giuliani took him under his wing, promoted him. I could see as a New Yorker when Kerik was police commissioner that there was something seriously wrong with him. Shortly after 9/11, there was a dispute between the NYPD and the New York City Fire Department about who should have access to some a part of Ground Zero. And there was some kind of tussle between the two. And Kerik came out with a really brittle, insensitive statement about how even firefighters have to move aside when police, you know, are walking to a scene of a possible crime. Completely insensitive to all the firefighters and the lives of firefighters that have been lost in 9/11. So I wasn't all that surprised when all this other information came out about Bernie Kerik. And yes, it may well be that we'll find that Kerik was doing something, giving information that he shouldn't have been giving to News Corp reporters. But again, you know, innocent until proven guilty.
Mm-hmm.
And I certainly think that's something that's worthy of investigation.
Thank you, Professor Levinson.
You're very welcome.
Our guest this part of the program, Paul Levinson, professor of communication and media studies at Fordham University in New York City. Thanks also to Frank Rich from New York Magazine for being with us. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning and Chrissy Pease for producing the hour, to Rhonda Fanning for on-air production. We're back with another hour in just a moment.